one item on the agenda, a public hearing, and basically a discussion of the Columbia River Gorge Commission, House Bill 5011. We'll start off with Ms. Jordan, who has some comments for the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm going to draw your attention to this handout that's at your place. It provides a little historical view of the size of the agency budget since 1997, and you can see that it has fluctuated over time from a low point of about 400,000 in 1997-99 to the governor's proposed budget at almost $900,000. The major policy issue for your consideration in this budget is the difference between the Washington proposed budgets, which reflects 174,907 more than Oregon's proposed budget to cover cost of personnel increases. And the agency will later explain for some of those that are new that this is a joint budget. We share costs equally with the state of Washington for the coverage of the gorge area. And there were no, the performance measures are in your agency budget document behind the tab called Agency Summary. It's on page 25. And there were no budget notes, emergency board actions, reports, or special audits during the interim. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to the agency and introduce Jill Ahrens, who is the director of the Columbia River Gorge Commission, and with her is Satish Apadahay from the Department of Administrative Services.
And Ms. Ahrens, what we will do is you did not get the opportunity to do an overview of the agency during our early portion of discussion of budgets in this committee. So we'll start off with an overview and then go on to the other portion of your prepared testimony. But after the overview, we'll entertain some questions. And then we'll probably divide things up to have questions at certain times during your presentation. I could have a question.
Can people speak a little disloudly?
Yes, yes. So please proceed.
Great. Thank you. Good morning.
Speak into the microphone, too.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Jill Ahrens, A-R-E-N-S, Director of the Columbia River Gorge Commission as of September of 2006. This is my first time speaking before this group, and I'm really hoping that I don't make missteps. What you have received for packets from our agency this morning is a set of two fairly stiff pieces of information that have the outline that I'll be following today. Behind that is a set of supplemental information that has not been part of your packet to date. And then an update of the information from your original notebooks with the key performance measures in it. I've divided this into four parts, as was suggested by the state, key budget drivers, big issues, performance measures, prioritized list of programs and services, and quality efficiency improvement and policy option package and parity. We are a very small agency. As part of the overview, we have been in existence for about 20 years. Our authorization comes from a congressional act, the National Scenic Area Act, and that authorized the formation of the commission. We have 13 commissioners, 12 of whom vote. Three are elected or not elected. They're appointed by each of the three counties. There are three counties in Oregon, three counties in Washington that have land within the scenic area. It's about 300,000 acres. The other three commissioners on each side of the river are appointed by the governor of the state, and at least one of those needs to live within the scenic area. The funding is different because we have funding both from the state of Washington and the state of Oregon. The accounting is a little bit different in each of the states. In the state of Washington, there is basically one budget for both the commissioners' expenses and materials, as well as the operation of the agency itself. In Oregon, there are two separate general funds, one for the commissioners' expenses, materials, and the other for operations. We can only spend at the level of the lower of the two state agencies. So if there is a dollar offered more or approved by one state, it essentially means that we have twice that loss. So if we cannot use the extra dollar from one state, then we're losing basically $2 or one from each state. So our effect of not having parity is double. We have a little less than 9 FTE, and that goes to our key budget drivers with the parity of funding and Washington. Again, with our very small agency budget, every dollar for us counts, and we are working very hard and I think have accomplished a good track record of fiscal responsibility in that way. But again, that the parity is one of our biggest budget drivers. Personnel and benefits are a little greater than 92% of our budget. So if we were to have a 10% reduction, we would lose FTE, about 1.75 FTE. Of the remaining 7%, 8% of our budget, we are careful with that as well. A lot of that goes to contracts for rent, utilities, equipment like copiers. So we have very little in the way of discretionary budgetary items, but I've been impressed since I came to the commission that the staff turn off their lights in their offices as they go to another room to visit. So there is a very great awareness of cost. Population increase is also a driver for us, as you'll see in some later information. Population increases our caseload. It also puts more pressure on the precious resources that we are protecting. The staff and people who know the Scenic Act well talk about the SNCRs, which are our initials for the four different resources that we are protecting: scenic and natural, cultural, and recreational resources. The last one in the drivers and issues part of the presentation is the indicators project. I'll be talking about that, and you'll see that as a thread throughout the presentation. The indicators project, in my looking at records from the agency since I've been here, has been written about and talked about since about 2000. With budget cuts and other work, the indicators project has not been able to happen, and it is one of the commission's highest priorities right now, and it certainly is mine as well. We have key performance measures for the agency that the state gives us, and the indicators project is a type of key performance measurements for how successful the commission has been in performing its job in relation to the Scenic Area Act and its management plan. Right now, we have very little in the way of objective evidence saying these are the areas that we feel we've been most successful, or these are the areas where we really need to do different work in order to protect the resources and or to encourage economic development. You've seen the performance measures, and I don't believe that anything has changed in your newest packet. I did want to talk about another key performance measure that is going to be added to our agency. It's for new boards and commissions, and talks about various pieces of that. The commission welcomes this new key performance measure because with our due diligence and bylaws that we've developed over the last years, we have most of this already in place. And so we're pegging a target of between 85 and 90% for this new measure. It refers to the commission being versed in training itself, being aware of its fiscal responsibilities, being involved and instrumental in great policy actions or strategies for the commission. As part of your supplemental piece with the page that has our color logo on it, the second form is the revised Form C with the key performance measures as they're listed. We have 11 right now. I wanted just to briefly talk about several of those. The grants and loans program is part of the economic development of this commission. We certify all of the economic development loans that are distributed through the Oregon Investment Board. As far as number, development reviews is number 10. In the past, the agency has not done as well as the projections. And this year in 2006, during the time where the former director left, there was an interim director, and then I came on board. Our numbers, mainly due to the staff and our planning manager, Brian Litt, that number has increased to 95% on time development reviews. So I'm very pleased to report that. As I mentioned before, the Indicators Project will help us evaluate the Commission's success or lack of in protecting and enhancing resources and encouraging economic development that's consistent with the first. What we plan to do is to, first of all, get an evaluation of the current status. And in doing that, that will then allow us to look at development of complex interrelated measures that are forward-looking so that we can use what I call adaptive management to change course if we need to be more restrictive if we find that there is degradation of resources. We'll also be looking at revised performance metrics for the staff so that we can more clearly define and refine how the staff is evaluated, and this needs to go to the purposes of the Act. For the third part, the prioritized list of programs and services, yes?
At this point, we probably might be a good time to entertain a few questions, actually, and I will start it out, actually.
Great.
Just to, it doesn't really take much to spur some of the members, but I'll just... on the performance measures, in looking at these over the last week, I noted that some of them there was data for 2005. I would not expect that there would be data for 2006. But on others, there was data only. The most recent was 2004. Maybe I'm not looking at
it. It should have been 2005. This was presented originally in, I think, August of 2006.
Mr. Chair, under the new Appendix C that Joe has passed out, it isn't updated.
So this is perfect. Yes. The new Appendix has the data.
Yes.
What we received in the presentation did not.
Appendix D actually is the one that you were looking at.
No, this is, but in their new appendix here, it does have to be data. Additional question, And maybe Ms. Jordan could shed some light on this. The difference between the appropriation that has already been approved by the state of Washington and our appropriation is usually a difference in appropriation relates to a difference in personnel or services. What are the differences between the appropriations?
Mr. Chair, the differences between the two levels, there are two differences. One is that when Oregon was preparing its budget, it didn't have the final numbers from the state of Washington for the roll-up costs for the personnel increases that they have in their budget, so they couldn't include that in the budget. That's about $113,000 of it, so that would require a technical adjustment on our part. The second difference is that the state of Washington is funding a position for this indicators project that Ms. Arnes is talking about to you now, and that would be $61,000 for Oregon's share. Washington would,
of course, that's the one. That's the one package that you have.
Yes, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. Well, that explains that. Let's see, questions from the committee.
Yeah, could you follow up on that? Washington's appropriation is a million plus.
Just about that.
And this one is it the 880 or is it the 900,000 with the commissioner expenses?
It's what? The 880 that you're looking at. That is the joint expense.
That's the joint expense.
Correct.
And so then, as they take the lower of the two, then
they would. If Oregon adopted the 880, then Washington would not provide the additional resources.
Right. Okay. And then that makes a difference with this other position that you got in your package.
That's
okay.
Yeah.
The decision that will be before the committee is probably, we did not know about these additional costs, or we weren't able to estimate them beginning. So the additional cost, the 100,000 plus, actually relates to existing personnel. So if we did not fund that, I would assume that you'd probably have to reduce the number of personnel you have, because you don't have that much in the budget to be able to absorb that level of a cut. And then we'll make an independent decision on probably the additional position. One question I had, and maybe I'm just looking, it would take me a while to find this, but I sometimes sit up at night and read these.
Oh. Good sleeping pill, I'm sure.
We worry about you at times.
There appears to be a difference in cost between the compensation or costs for the commissioners from Oregon versus Washington.
Yes.
Can you explain that?
I will try to explain it. There are two different pieces of it. The per diem rate between Oregon and Washington is different. It is higher in Washington, but it's funded at a lower rate or a lower amount.
So the per diem rate is higher in Washington.
Yes.
But it's funded at a lower amount.
Well, the whole amount is lower.
Oh, okay.
It's about $16,000, I think, for the Washington piece for commissioner expenses and materials. 22.7.
I'm just going to ask Ms. Arnes, is it because the commissioners in Washington spend less money than to get to their meetings than Oregon, or?
I don't know that for a fact. I'm trying to think of expense reports that have come through. I know that one commissioner in Washington does not submit expense reports.
Also, I think that the risk management charges on the Oregon side are higher than they are for Washington, which explains the difference in the level that's being budgeted.
And if I remember correctly, one of the reasons are our risk management charges. It's been a bad day. One of the reasons our risk management charges are higher is that Oregon depleted almost all of its reserves in those funds during our budget. So we're trying to actually restore some of those. So.
Yes, Representative Plant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is the population that either lives in or, I guess, estimated travels in the gorge similar between the two states? Because obviously the state's populations are not similar. Triple or something.
Yeah, I don't have population numbers with me. I do have information about the area within the scenic area for both states and the workload that we have separated out for both states. Clark County has only 6,000 acres in the scenic area, and most of their population is outside of the scenic area. There is a much greater amount of acreage in Multnomah County, which is where the population lies. Let's see if I can find this for you.
In deference to the audience, we probably should all try to speak a little bit louder because there are
Great.
People trying to follow our conversations up here.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Briefly then, there appears to me to be more population on the Oregon side than on the Washington side, mm-hmm. although I don't have figures for that. We've tried to look at population, and it's difficult to sort out the population within the scenic area.
Oh, Mr. Chair, the scenic area doesn't include people who live in the cities, correct? Like Hood River, not in the scenic area?
It's included in the scenic area, but it's we don't have jurisdiction over urban areas.
Another question, Mr. Chair. On the per diem amounts, do the commissioners receive, sounds like more than mileage. What is the rate for a commissioner if they come to a meeting?
It would be standard mileage rate, and if they need to stay overnight due to a meeting or a commission event, then that would be part of their expense as well. Some of the preparation materials that are given to commissioners are also included in that budget.
So, Mr. Chair, if I've got this right, it sounds like theirs is a little bit different than legislative, where you sort of assume a bunch of those things and build it into a daily rate. This is actual reimbursements for mileage. If they don't use the hotel, they don't get the, you know, it's not really per diem per day. It's expenses that they use on a particular given day.
Right.
Okay, that makes sense.
Well, because of the bi-state nature of this, I would assume that there might be some differences between this and how we treat some of our other commissions and committees, too. The standard rate that actually a lot of people that serve on commissions that the state has is $30 a day plus mileage. That hasn't been changed probably in decades.
Mr. Chair, I can't go back to OSAC and try and get a refund, can I? I think I was just mileage.
Any additional questions at this point? Please proceed with the next section.
And if I may, Mr. Chair, ask how much more time you'd like me to spend on the next two items, the last two.
30 minutes.
Great. That'd be good. Thank you. Item number three is prioritized list of programs and services. This is what we are emphasizing at the commission right now. Basically, it's our North Star, and our prioritized programs and services are relating to the purposes of the Act, the statutory requirements of the Act, and our management plan in dealing with that. The first part of supplemental forms that you have is our work plan that's been updated as of November when I had been with the commission several months. It will be updated again with the new biennium. It's broken into categories, and the first one is administrative. Starred items either have a very high priority and or are a significant work effort, and you'll see that the indicators project is top on that list. We are still working with congressional delegations to secure additional funding. The commission is lacking about $1 million for each state in its economic development promises. So we are continuing to work at that. working on media relations, public information as far as educating our constituents more. Bylaws update. We are in the process of updating our bylaws right now, and we do this periodically as well as when an issue comes up. Another piece of paper that you have is just a map of the scenic area. And you can see that it begins on the west at the Sandy River Delta. And the color picture that you have as well is very representative of some of the work that the commission has done and that the Scenic Act provided. This is the same photo at different times of Troutdale and the Sandy River Delta. The top picture was taken in 1988, the bottom picture in 2005. If you take a look at the areas that look like farmland or open areas in the Troutdale area, you'll see a great difference in the bottom picture where most of it has been filled in. The tract on this side of the page is within the scenic area. The next document has a series of three charts on it, and it goes to the area within the scenic area by acres for each state and by county, number of applications monitored, and development reviews. I thought that this would be helpful in seeing how the land distribution is between Oregon and Washington. In the past, I know that the commission has been criticized or there has been a lot of wonder about whether the commission is doing more work for the Washington part of the scenic area. The area here shows that Washington has about 134 acres within the scenic area. Excuse me, I'm sorry. 134,000 and 95,000 in Oregon. Skamania is the largest county here that's represented with over 70,000 acres. More than a third of that is in federal lands. The number of county applications, in 2006 we had over 180. 49% were in Oregon, 51 in Washington. The year prior to that, Oregon was tipped the balance and they had 53. So our work distribution between the states seems to be fairly even. The next part of this is the director's priorities, and I bring this to you because these are issues and environmental work culture items that are very important to me. I am working with the commission on this, and as I go through these, it's not to say that these haven't been done in the past by the commission, but to reiterate my commitment to working in this way. The first one is customer service and that we are public servants, first and foremost. And that needs to be reiterated. It needs to be in every staff person's mind. We need to be proactive versus just responsive. As we all know, we can fill any amount of time with whatever work might come to us or however we would want to spend it. Without priorities and being very proactive, the most important work may not get done, such as the indicators and such as our other statutory work. So I feel very strongly that keeping priorities on the front line and moving to those is very important. It also reflects in staff work, so that they understand, every staff person understands that their work is directly related to a priority and to the both purposes of the Act. I think it helps increase staff satisfaction to understand that, to understand the importance of their work. It also identifies with the mission, and again, it will be reflected in revised staff performance measures so that we're directly relating their work to statutory items and priority items. There has been collaboration with other agencies in the past, and we want to expand that, to continue it, and to work on items before they come to an enforcement, a legal enforcement issue, or to litigation. So we are committed to alternative dispute resolution. Since I have been here, I know of at least one instance where something has not come to the commission because we've been able to talk with the parties. And I feel that is a very valuable way of spending our time, to come to joint resolution and not take up commission time and money, and to be able to work more closely in a collaborative way. Administrative procedures, I think, can most always be streamlined or standardized better than they have been, and that's just one other area that we'll be working on to become more efficient. And that brings us to the quality efficient improvement piece of this and policy option package. I spoke earlier about our fiscal responsibility, and we just got this earlier this week, and it is the Gold Star comprehensive annual financial report that our agency received for 2006, and it basically is stating that we have very well documented details, and we are very timely with our reporting. It also mentions, in particular, Rebecca Jasso, our CAFR accountant, and Satish, who's been working with us this year, that we have relied on very heavily and have been very pleased with. In addition to that Oregon report, we recently had an exit interview with the State of Washington auditors. Since we are employees of Washington State and our reporting capabilities are contracted with the State of Washington, they are the ones who have done this audit, but also in conjunction with the Oregon financial officers. This finding that we don't have a complete report for yet, that has no findings for us, no findings against us. As Ms. Jordan said earlier, we have no budget notes and no e-board actions. Looking at standardizing administrative procedures and improving efficiency in that way, I was reviewing the last hearing in 2005, and on that, during that, there was mention of a handbook for streamlining the process of a person building in the scenic area. This has been completed. It's a very thoughtful, easy-to-read booklet that will make it, has made it much easier for builders to maneuver, navigate through the system. Since this is an expensive product, we also have the less expensive brochure that answers more basic questions before a person is really committed to building in the area. We also have a new website that we are designing. It's in the last phases. It will probably be launched in the late spring sometime. Right now, we are populating it with content and seeing if all the links work. But we will also be able to publish much more easily and to post on the website a lot more information that will give the populace or anyone interested much more information online about our commission meetings, about background materials, about litigation in the past. So we are really looking forward to this. In addition, we also have capability with this website of cross-referencing and reporting capabilities. So we are working hard on this. Another administrative streamline that we have done is to implement expedited development reviews so that a person building a house needs to follow a lot more guidelines than someone constructing a fence that is nowhere near a stream. So in that way, we've saved a lot of individuals' work, our staff work, and the turnaround time has been much quicker. We're also working to digitalize our records. I spoke of this briefly with the website. And in doing that, we are planning on funding part of it ourselves, but also to get a grant and work with the Discovery Center in the Dalles. They would like to be the repository, since they are one of the accredited museums in the country, for anything of the scenic area or the commission or the Scenic Act. So they are requesting a grant that will be awarded in July. They're hoping for that to have all of our 20 years of paper documents online.
Yes. Are they a private institution?
They were funded by monies from the Scenic Area Act. I know that the museum is county, I believe, isn't it?
Two museums in one.
Two. And is separately funded.
One of them is a private nonprofit. One of them is a county museum that partially gets federal money. Did I hear that right? County money.
There was.
I'm sorry. I didn't want to make a bigger deal than it was. But if you don't mind, just coming to the microphone real quick and just
identify yourself.
Yeah, tell me how the museums work.
I'm Judy Davis, chair of the Gorge Commission and the Wasco County appointee to the commission. The Columbia Gorge Discovery Center is two museums in one. One is the Wasco County Historical Museum, which originally got a lot of funding from a bequest, which also provides an endowment as well as provided construction money. And the other half of it is the official museum of the National Scenic Area, which was, there was $5 billion authorized. $5 million after. Way too much money.
So we're done with this budget.
My husband says I always say numbers wrong. $5 million authorized in the Scenic Area Act for the building of a museum. And so there is a joint board, as I understand it, that operates the two museums. There's no public money going to either the museums at this time.
And what's their relationship, one more time, relative to the commission?
We have no direct relationship with them. The Forest Service, as part of the scenic area, does provide one person as an interpretive person to help staff the museum.
Ms. Arons, what you were describing, that they're going to be the depository of something relative to what something the commission does.
They would like to be the repository, since their $5 million of funding to build it was from the Scenic Act, to be the repository of all official or unofficial documents. That's what they would like to be, since they are a museum, an accredited museum.
I don't want to belabor too much because we're getting into something maybe different than the budget issue itself, but I guess I'm curious about what state documents or state artifacts or things that are managed by the commission, which is a state entity, mm-hmm. end up in the hands of a private museum, privately funded, and what that means with respect to it being a repository of official state documents.
It's a good question. Since all of our records, except for privileged communications, are open, that was one reason we were considering this.
Well, maybe something to revisit
yes.
later. Thank you.
Senator Rebakian, it might probably not strictly related to this budget, but it is an issue that we may or may not see in another budget. But should the Oregon Historical Society is in the same type of situation. If something was to happen to the Oregon Historical Society and we have an appropriation that's in the budgets for them, actually, the first time in several bienniums, I would think that, as Senator Johnson has said, they may just come down here and unload truckloads on
the Archives Division.
It's a very good example, and I was thinking of the Historical Society when you mentioned this, the difference being that the Historical Society is charged by state law as being the official repository for state artifacts and documents, and I don't know that there is any such arrangement with this private entity. And so it's something for us to just discuss more, I think, before any kind of an arrangement is formalized.
Yes, agreed. And it's also trickier because we are by state.
Yes. Yes. Susan, I'm sorry, I interrupted.
That's right. You made my point. The law.
The law.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Is now time to take a few more questions, or where are we at?
Do you have anything additional in your presentation?
Yes, I do. I have the parity package and the policy option package.
Okay. Could you hold a representative time for those?
I can make it very quick. The policy option package, Ms. Jordan mentioned earlier, it's just under $62,000 for the Oregon share, which is for a full-time equivalent for the biennium. And it is for the indicators project and what we consider statutory requirements in order to find out how we are doing to objectively and neutrally evaluate that. The other piece is parity. One of the last pieces you have in your supplemental package is Natural Resources and Recreation Agency 460, which is the Washington budget approved, governor's approved budget. And it talks about the indicator project support and about the new information that has come in and about the numbers that weren't known when we submitted our budget in Oregon. The last piece is HB 5011, and the very last page is just a chart showing the differences between the Oregon and Washington funding. In conclusion, I would like to thank you once again for your time and for your consideration of our budget. We have received letters of support. I know that there are people here who will comment in public testimony. The agency has been very fiscally responsible, and we will continue to be meeting our key performance indicators as well as just in general accounting. We do feel we have a real need for this indicators project, and it is a big thread of this. The relative size of the commission budget for general funds for the biennium is about, it's less than 1/10,000th of the general funds. And so any monies that are appropriated to us means a lot to us. It doesn't have a big impact on the whole Oregon budget, but it means a lot to us. I would respectfully request that you approve funding as high as you can and hopefully in parity with Washington. Thank you.
Representative Clinton.
Mr. Chair, I just had a question. I was looking through this document talking about the 03, 05, and then 05, 07, and now we're looking at 07, 09. And it looked to me like in between 03 and 05 and 05 and 07, there was about a 40% increase in the budget. And in the narratives, it seems to describe... So it went from $601,600 in 03-05 to $869,000 in 05-07. So a $270,000 increase in the budget during that 2-year period. Talks about
package 83, which was the e-board item for $30,000 additional general fund to services and supplies, and then $137,000 in what was called package 100 for planning. Looked like it was all basically a planning position all in the state of Washington. And it may be that the way with your parity it works, those two things together add up once you match them to the increase. But I don't think so. I think it's about half the increase. I'm just wondering what happened with that money, mm-hmm. and where does the need still exist?
Several biennia ago, the budget was cut significantly. So what you are seeing there is addition to almost get it up to where it was before. We have 8.75 FTE right now. I believe that three positions were cut during that
Representative
downturn.
Clinton, I might clarify, if you went back one biennium mm-hmm. before you started, you would have seen the cuts that we made during the special sessions, mm-hmm. and when we cut a lot of agencies like this either significantly or we cut them in their entirety during that time.
Chair, and I guess my question maybe more for the chair is, were other agencies, because I remember being here and seeing a lot of agencies cut, were other agencies sort of made whole again in 2003-2005? Or I hear a lot of people come into my office claiming, make us whole from what happened 2001-2005. And they look like they were made whole at one point, and now we're talking about some new things. So that's kind of the point of my question.
Representative Clem, welcome to Ways and Means.
Freshman, once again.
The person that comes to your office and requests less money is going to be the exception.
You're going to be out of a job.
Two other questions, actually. One, I saw something here referenced to Measure 37. Does the commission play a role in some of the Measure 37 claims?
We're still wondering about that. In early December, we argued in the Court of Appeals that the scenic area is exempt from Measure 37. We have not heard as of yet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One more?
Yes.
I had some correspondence from a lot of people, actually, to my office, and then I also saw this project mentioned in the Umatilla Tribe's letter. This is the Broughton Landing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Where is that idle lumber mill that they're describing? What state in it, and is it within a city, or where
is it? It's not in an urban area. It's in the state of Washington. It's west of White Salmon, east of Stevenson. SR-14 runs right through it, and you might have seen the flume on the Washington side that was part of that mill at one time.
Mr. Chair, if I might just follow up on that piece. Essentially, the nature of my correspondence, I think, is that folks are supportive of some of the other air quality packages. They're concerned about how much effort and time are spent on that project. I'm guessing they don't necessarily want that project to happen. I'm not sure, but the letters indicate they think a lot of time is being spent on that. Can you sort of talk about that? I see the tribe talks about the commission undertaking a significant plan amendment to address that conversion. It will be a time-consuming task. Is it taking a lot of time just for that one project?
It has been ongoing several years, not all the time, but at different points in time. It's a very unique project because it is on land designated commercial recreation. It's the largest piece of commercial recreation that is in the scenic area at this time. It also is kind of a landmark because it speaks to both our purposes. It speaks to the resource as well as the economic development. It's in Skamania County. It's a very complex issue. A lot of land. It is. It has a lot of potential for. It's high risk, high gain, I guess. It's at this point. We're at the point of looking at what makes most sense.
one quick follow-up on that. So it was zoned, I assume, not commercial recreation at one time, or commercial slash recreation. So when it was a mill, was that also what it was, or did it change? Did the county change it at some point for a different use?
I can't remember when the mill went out, when it was no longer a mill. It, in the mid-'80s, maybe, 82?
Yeah, and the commercial, pardon me, Brian Litt, the manager of Columbia Gorge Commission. The commercial recreation zoning was part of the adopted gorge management plan, which will be starting in October of 1991.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's all I got.
Yes, Representative Irwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you please explain a little bit more, or I might be getting ahead of the chair. If so, please let me know. But I'd like you to elaborate some more on this policy option package in the indicators project.
What it is for. Again, we're looking at years of work to develop these measurements that will look at resource degradation, economic development over time. So we need someone in the commission to really ride herd on this. We'll be looking for grant monies to provide scientific and objective data, but we need someone within the commission to really make sure that this happens in a way that is reliable, that's measurable, and that we can use over time to see cumulative effects of decisions that are happening.
Follow-up, Mr.
Yes.
Thank you. So would it be accurate then to say that this is more or less a monitoring project to be able to measure actual quantitative effects, as you point out?
That is our hope, yes, to be able to measure. And if we look at some of the complexity with two purposes of the Act, we're looking at dealing with air quality as a resource issue and as an economic issue. And so there are obvious interrelationships that need to be very carefully addressed in order to tease out what are true impacts that the commission could affect or influence.
Follow up. In the governor's recommended budget narrative on page 74, it's not clear to me reading this. It says the package would provide contract services. And it also goes on to say that the funding would be used for purchasing of multi-year services or one FTE. So it sounds to me like it's not clear whether or not this is going to be a service that's contracted out or if it's going to be an FTE.
When this came out, what you're reading came out, Martha Bennett, the former director, had left, and the interim director was there. I was not there yet. And at the time, they were weighing the options of do we contract this or do we need an extra FTE? Since then, it's clear to me that we need someone on staff to do this, and it is to be ongoing over time.
Follow up. If you wanted to have a program that provided you an objective evaluation of how you're doing, wouldn't it seem that you might get a more objective review if you had an outside party come in and take that critical examination?
The examination will be done by outside parties. The development, the measurements will be crafted by outside people, and the original evaluation measure, the status report, will be done. It's absolutely essential, you're right, that work be done in a neutral, objective way. But we need a staff person to be carrying the ball and be very familiar with all the work that's going on.
One last, Mr. Chair, thank you. I also have, you know, again in the budget narrative, and I recognize this is in the governor's recommended budget, and there might be, I don't know, is there an updated POP on this at all? Okay. You know, it talks about the services here, and I can understand the notion of the monitoring and measurement of cumulative effects, but you know, in here it talks about adding capacity so that we can staff public outreach efforts, citizens advisory committee, developing a specific media program. I mean, these are, to me, those are activities that are implementation activities that really aren't associated with measuring, you know, these cumulative effects, these quantitative measures of how are we, you know, what are the effects we're having on the resources.
Mm-hmm. That is a lesser piece of that. I think the anecdotal information is important to get as well, but that is not, the scientific, the objective data is what we really need.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We only have about 33 minutes left, and we will go to public testimony in about 2 to 3 minutes. I did want to put two questions on the record, though, and and just get a quick response from you. People come to me, and I think you're in kind of a dilemma here, because there are people that believe that the Commission spends too much time reviewing development projects and not spending enough time looking at some of the basic conditions in the Columbia Gorge in terms of water quality, air quality, wildlife issues. How do you react to that dilemma?
It's a very good question. If we don't look at reviews, if we don't look at county applications, we're not doing our job with enforcement. And we have statutory requirements for monitoring, and we have statutory requirements for seeing how well are we doing overall. They're very different issues.
And
does that answer your question?
Or? Yes, it does. Just another item, just to note for the record, in developing the policy package, that was probably done too before your tenure. But they referred to a number of agencies that don't actually exist in the state of Oregon, and one of them was the Department of Natural Resources. And I can think of several agency heads that if we started talking about a Department of Natural Resources here, might think that there is a consolidation effort.
No.
And so probably the proposal needs to be characterized by what's the circumstances in both states. We do have about 10 people to testify. We were only expecting about 4. So what I will do is start calling them up, and I will go with the people that are more than 100 miles away at first, and then we will go to the rest. We'll have about 2 minutes each. Ms. Jordan, do you want to note the letters that we have for the record?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. We have 5 letters copies placed at your place there. One from the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs Reservation of Oregon. There is one from Barbara Briggs, one from the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation, one from Marianne Nelson, and the last one is from Thomas Nicolai. Cannot enter into the record.
And does BAM have anything to add? Budget management.
Mr. Chairman, we will not have this point.
Well, then, thank you very much, and we will go directly to public testimony. Do you have anything to add?
Just one more letter that I've received from Jürgen Hess in support.
Okay, and if you'll make that available to the we will start off with Joan Carter. Yeah, you checked probably the wrong side. Okay. Mr. Denton. Please come forward, identify yourself, and you'll have about 2 minutes.
My name is Jim Denton, and I'm from Hood River County. I wasn't expecting to be first on the list here. I'm very supportive of fully funding the Gorge Commission. I do quite a bit of recreating in the Gorge. I think the Gorge has benefited very much from the founding of the scenic area. I think there's a lot of undue criticism on the effect of the scenic area on the economy. If you look at the economy of the area. There have always been businesses that close down, businesses that open. So I don't think there's been a negative overall effect since the start of the scenic area. I've got just a short little list here of major business closures that have occurred over the years. In 1904, one of the newest and most modern mills in Hood River County, that happened to also be the largest at that time, closed long before the scenic area. Around 1900, it's a variable date because I think Oregon and Washington had different dates. They got rid of fish wheels, and that caused loss of jobs. It had nothing to do with the scenic area. Various improvements in transportation over the years, railroads, larger locks, more automated transportation, things have cut down on jobs. Bonneville Dam totally changed the economy of many areas, wiped out, you know, previous jobs that were at the old Cascade locks and whatever. Many other lumber mills have disappeared over the years. Broughton, Stevenson, Bridalveil, the lumber industry has been largely automated so that jobs have disappeared. None of that has anything to do with the scenic area. I know in particular in one area, an old sheep ranch got closed down around 1960. Thousands of acres of land was offered at $10 an acre for sale. Now with the scenic area in there, the land's worth way, way more than that. So when people complain that their lands have been devalued, I think history says that it's been pretty good for people. So.
Thank you very much. Mr. Pitt.
I'm Louis Pitt, Director of Government Affairs and Planning for the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs Reservation of Oregon. I remember Representative Terry Thompson, when he was here, asked me what I was doing here when we came down to first talk to people about our budget. Is that, quite simply put, is that that's still our area down there? We gave to the United States 10 million acres, of which clearly the gorge is in. So we have treaty rights, off reservation, never left the area. We have fishing sites down there, federal fishing sites. We have people still live there. And, of course, as you probably have heard, we want to return back to the gorge in a big way. So, anyway, we haven't relinquished any of our rights down there, and the reason is because the contract of the treaty, we retained rights to work there. With me is Mike Mason. Let me read the letter here. Is Confederated Tribes supports the Columbia River Gorge Commission to the highest amount possible. The Gorge Management Plan supports our off-reservation treaty rights through sharing of information, a process through actions before they're implemented. Planning is a wonderful tool. I wish we'd use it more often. House Bill 5011 has a joint operating program at $880,093 and commissioner expenses at $22,770. As we understand, in the state of Washington may be submitting a budget with an appropriations to do the same, we would support the highest amount of the two states' amounts. The Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs Reservation supports the appropriation that is the highest between the states of Oregon and Washington. And I think a little bit later, I think this monitor, take a look at the Umatilla. They put more meat to the bone, but I think we... at Warm Springs is that the general policy has been consistent with our policies and has been very favorable to protecting our way of life as guaranteed through the treaty. And so I'm a fully recovered gorge commissioner, former gorge commissioner, and so it's been a challenge. Is that in my simplified view of how things work, the process is that we have to do our share of the work, which is that process you talked about with the development reviews and all that really is a wonderful tool to get ahead of actions that could happen down there. And the land use planning, which it is that I think is a wonderful tool also to try to protect places that we previously agreed to. If boundaries move or some new information comes up, we talk and collaborate, and the commission staff and the commissioner. Commission has been very open in working with our tribes at Warm Springs. That hybrid in the state of Washington is, they have the Yakima tribes, and again, I can't speak for the Yakima tribes, but just a matter of fact is that they have treaty rights and had given to the United States roughly the other half of the areas from above Cascade Locks up to way up river. The Umatilla tribe share rights with us on the river and have certain rights here and there. Although they don't have ceded lands that they give to the United States, we still share treaty rights of fishing and hunting on the river and housing at Celilo too. So anyway, we're in support again of, I think, an agency that does its job, works with, collaborates with tribes, and is a good partner to have. We never could figure out, trying to label what is this thing called the Gorge Commission, and it's a difficult one, as I think I've heard the executive director and the chair itself have difficult trying to, but it works. That's all I can say, it works. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I still have 8 more people to testify.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Thank you, committee.
Thank you. Ms. Chappell. Francis Chappell. And if you could please limit yourself to about 2 minutes, or I'm going to run out of time for people who have signed up.
I'm speaking as a private individual, a long-time devotee of the gorge and of its hiking trails. And so the Columbia River Gorge is a scenic, natural, and geologic wonder, as well as a fragile environment for plants, trees, and animals. Whilst being a national treasure, it is also particularly beloved by Oregonians, who treasure its superb hiking and recreational opportunities. It's vital that we protect this environment for ourselves and for future generations in a world in which development with its attendant pollution, traffic, noise, and degradation increasingly infringe on our wild places. To this end, I strongly support the budget of $888,093 for the Gorge Commission. Plus, I strongly urge that this new position at a cost of $61,000 be created for a staff person to examine the overall effect of development on the gorge. There has of late, it seems to me, been too much emphasis by the Commission on looking for ways to allow more development and less emphasis on conservation. This stands in stark opposition to the basic aim of the National Scenic Area Act and the Columbia River Gorge Compact. Conservation should and must be the fundamental thrust of the Commission's work. Sorry, if we are to stop the irreversible degradation of this treasure. Thank you for your time.
And oh, could you state your name for the record?
Francis Chappell.
Okay, thank you.
And may I submit that?
Mr. Lang. Mr. Lang here.
That was a fine mission statement for the board, Mr. Chester.
I have some prepared testimony, and I'll summarize it.
Morning, Chair Devlin and members of the subcommittee. For the record, my name is Michael Lang, Conservation Director for Friends of the Columbia Gorge. And also joining me today is Bob Olson, who's been representing Friends down here in Salem and helping us out. And you may have spoken to him before the hearing. So when you see Bob and want to know what's going on in the gorge, he should bring you up to speed. Friends of the Columbia Gorge, it has about 4,000 members in Oregon and Washington, and just a little bit about what our mission is. It's to support the protection and enhancement of the scenic beauty and natural and cultural heritage of the Columbia River Gorge, and also to support responsible recreation and economic development in gorge communities. Friends of the Columbia Gorge was one of the early groups that supported the National Scenic Area Act, or the concept of federal protection for the Columbia River Gorge, but also with a strong role for the states of Oregon and Washington and also the local communities. And The National Scenic Area Act has been around since 1986. The Columbia River Gorge Commission, of course, is a product of that federal law and an interstate compact between Oregon and Washington, which created the 13-member Gorge Commission with representatives, six from Oregon and six from Washington. Friends of the Columbia Gorge asked that the subcommittee fully fund the Gorge Commission in the coming biennium. They're a small agency with a small budget, and it's always a very complicated budget because it's a product of an interstate compact, but it serves such a critical role and has such an important job that so many Oregonians and Washingtonians strongly support, and that's a protection and enhancement of resources in the Columbia River Gorge. So friends would ask that the subcommittee fully fund the commission at the same level that Washington does, although this year it's a first. I think Oregon's budget will probably come out before Washington's. We're expecting Washington's legislature not to act until the budget or economic forecast are released in March in Washington. So this biennium, I think we're a little ahead of the folks in Washington State, but to fully fund the commission. Friends has expressed some concerns, and I think we've shared it with some of you about the amount of development in the Columbia River Gorge. We have a development database in-house for Friends, and there are about 1,400 new residential developments that have been approved in the scenic area outside of urban areas. We're completing a buildable lands inventory. We expect that 1,800 more houses and many more land divisions can be approved under the current rules. The problem is the Gorge Commission, whose responsibility is to protect and enhance resources, adopt a gorge-wide management plan, and adopt ordinances to implement that plan, really has no idea whether or not the existing management plan is working. In 1997, this is 10 years ago, the Commission adopted just a great work plan for monitoring the effects of development in the gorge and making sure that the purposes of the act to protect and enhance resources was carried out. 1997, and unfortunately that plan was never implemented because of budget cuts and because of what Friends considers misplaced priorities. The commission, and therefore us, we don't know if the gorge is protected. We're asking that the state legislatures fund what the commission calls an indicators project. It's really a cumulative effects monitoring project. It answers the question, are scenic landscapes, is critical habitat being protected from the onslaught of development? It really should have been done years ago. We have the hope that it will be done. We're not giving up on it. We're glad to see the commission still has it in their work plan. However, the concern is that the commission has heard what our plan amendments has changed the rules in the gorge to allow more development in a very systematic way and delayed the implementation of the indicators plan. We've had a commercial uses expanded, a plan amendment that was heard. It took considerable time expanding commercial uses to any structure that might be considered a historic building. Horse boarding in residential zones. Apparently that's a higher priority than finding out if the Scenic Area Act is working. That's a plan amendment that the commission is currently considering.
I don't mean to speed you up, but
if we
finish up, I won't get to the other people.
We'll summarize, and you all are aware of the Broughton Lumber Company plan amendment, huge plan amendment for a destination resort. It's a time and resource suck while other things aren't being completed. On the last page of my testimony, I have budget priorities. Certainly, air quality and air pollution is a significant problem in the gorge. The commission plays a role along with the DEQ and Washington state agencies. We absolutely need an air quality strategy in the gorge. We also need to get the monitoring program going, with the priority being scenic resource protection and figuring out if we're protecting endangered species in the gorge. That's a huge priority. Along with that, updating inventories for threatened species and their habitat, and finishing and getting online a geographic information system, GIS system. Most county planning agencies have functioning GIS systems. The Gorge Commission is not quite there yet. That's absolutely essential to be able to understand whether or not the resource is protected. And then we're also recommending that Any plan amendment activities that would weaken the rules and allow more development are halted until these other critical programs are put into place. And that would conclude my testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I am going to do harm to this name if I try to pronounce it because I can't tell what the first letter is. So Peter from Hood River. I can't tell what the first letter is. Now, I'm afraid we're running out of time. So what I'm going to do is at 2 minutes, I'm going to actually cut you off. So I'm sorry about that, but I'm going to have to.
That's fine.
I think we'll make it through everybody. I want to make it through everybody, but I'm going to have to actually cut people off now because we're running very short. So please proceed.
Thank you, Chair, and members of the subcommittee. My name is Peter Cornelison. I live in Hood River. I work part-time for Friends of the Columbia Gorge, but I'm here as a private citizen today. And as you've heard discussed, there are urban areas of the gorge and there are the scenic areas of the gorge. The scenic areas depend on the land continuing to look rural or wild. That's kind of the standard. I support the Indicators Project, and I'll show you why. This is a picture of Underwood Mountain, which is the view that we in Hood River look at all the time. And it is one of the most, if not the most, threatened and endangered viewsheds. And it is exactly where this proposed destination resort is going to go. You can see all the factors that are affecting Underwood Mountain. But the critical point is the point on the very left-hand side. Namely, there's no Indicators Project or monitoring that's been in place for over 20 years to tell whether the land is going from rural to suburban. And that's where the emphasis needs to be. And that's why this additional person needs to be funded the $60,000 expenditure. That's it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I guess I miss Mary Marais from Marion County.
It's Mary Nary. It rhymes, but that's okay. Everybody tries to make it not rhyme, so I have many pronunciations. I am here as a member of the Friends of the Gorge, a group that has dedicated itself over the years to strive for sustainability of the scenic qualities of the gorge. I am here today to add my Salem voice for support of the proposed budget with the added proviso that a staff position be funded to examine the cumulative impact of development in the gorge. Since the late 1940s, I have been a visitor to the Columbia Gorge. However, at that time, I was only 13 years old and riding a Greyhound bus. In those days, the beauty of the area was not contaminated yet by pollution of the air, water, and soil. Now the sustainability of the Columbia Gorge's beauty and natural resources is increasingly being called into question. So what I want to say here, and to make it short, is that I feel that this budget needs to be supported by the committee and also by the legislature, and that to these ends, the following additions to the budget bill, which I already support, are recommended: to fund a staff person at $61,000 to examine the impact of development in the gorge, and as a result, to recommend ongoing sustainable practices to the commission, and to add to the budget bill the directive to restrict the Gorge Commission from using their budget to change the management plan by amending it to include development within the gorge. These additions to the budget plan will offer a sustainability factor to the overall management of the Columbia Gorge by the Gorge Commission. As a result, it will guarantee the scenic beauty of the gorge for future generations, which I consider to be key. And I agree with the, what's it called, the project? Thanks.
Joan Carter.
Is there a Joan Carter?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. I am Joan Carter from McMinnville and have been an Oregon resident for just 4 years. But in the last year, I made a decision to get involved with Friends of the Gorge and have joined them on many, many hikes. And I also hike in many other states. And one of the most important features of each of the hikes that I choose is that the viewsheds are protected. And as I have gone on these hikes with the Gorge Friends, I'm noticing more and more encroachment, not only in air quality, but certainly in the buildings, especially over in Mosier, where somebody pointed out to me, see that condo climbing up the side of the gorge. That was not there just a matter of years ago. So I am here in full support of what the Friends of the Gorge are trying to accomplish, which is the full funding of this extra person, as well as a sensible and monitored response in their budget to make sure that the funds are used appropriately. And there are 4,000 members of the Friends of the Gorge that are going to be watching how the commission is operating and that they operate responsibly. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Werner.
Thank you for hearing my testimony. I am a native Oregonian and a resident of Lake Oswego, Oregon.
And could you state your name for
yes,
the record?
Yes, my name is Judith Werner.
And if you could limit your testimony to about 2 minutes.
Right, I'll say this fast. I am here because I'm an Oregonian with a passionate love of the Columbia River Gorge. My understanding is that sustainable economic development in the gorge, handled by the Oregon and Washington Columbia Gorge Commissions, was created to protect the gorge from unwise and detrimental development as outlined in the Columbia River Gorge Scenic Area Act, an act to first protect a natural and national treasure and secondly to promote and preserve the existing urban communities within the area and not to spread them out. This latter in a manner consistent with the purpose of protecting and enhancing the scenic, cultural, and natural resources of the gorge and to ensure no adverse impacts on these priorities. I don't think there... Oh, I'm sorry. Page 2. Gorge protection is vital, and we need to uphold the Gorge National Scenic Area Act, never dropping our vigilance, I know I won't, over one of the most stunningly beautiful areas in the world, not just the nation. I will never forget the Sunday drives my father always wanted to take up the gorge when I was a child. Indeed, I barely, mind you, remember the Indians with their nets fishing for the abundant wild salmon at Celilo Falls. Somehow I knew, or thought I knew, that the gorge would not change, that it would be and should be the same into perpetuity. That was not a child's naivete, but a child's common sense, that the gorge would be there always in all its pristine grandeur. This is why we took these drives. This is why people from all over the world come to see the gorge. They do not come to drive through and pass suburban communities, strip malls, resorts, casinos, fast food restaurants, and gas stations with their convenience stores. I firmly believe that this is what the gorge could become with careless decision making. One resort, one gated community, one casino will bring along with them unbelievable traffic, air pollution, crime, and basically eyesores. And so, anyway, I don't think there is anyone who wants this for the gorge, but this is what could easily become the cumulative impact of economic development. And so I am here to help support the $880,093 budget and to emphasize the importance of the additional $61,000 for a commission staff position for the purpose of examining the cumulative impact of development in the gorge, an extremely critical void that we currently have. Perhaps someday we will all agree that in regards to the Columbia River Gorge, nothing is as important as the total protection of it. its natural, scenic, cultural, and recreational opportunities. And so I would hope that the Oregon legislature would vote in favor of the proposed budget and the monies for the new commission staff position. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Springer.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Dick Springer. I live in southeast Portland. I'd like to, first of all, not repeat, but endorse the statement and position stated by Mr. Lang with Friends of the Columbia Gorge. I appear here this morning as a member of the board of the Friends of the Columbia Gorge. It's been my honor to serve on the board for over 7 years now. I'm currently the secretary of the board. It's a tremendous organization. Most Native Oregonians, I've been able to enjoy the gorge since childhood, taking my children there myself for hikes, enjoyed the orchards, participated in work parties to try to protect the state parks and enhance it for other Oregonians and visitors. It was my honor while serving in the legislature 20 years ago to vote for the enabling legislation. While serving in the state senate, I reviewed the appointments to serve on the gorge commission and the budgets. You've heard the tremendous growth pressure that's occurring, the economic transition in the gorge area. The Gorge Commission itself, the folks who serve on the commission as well as the staff, I think this represents a classic federal, state, local, and private interest partnership. It's really the only vehicle or forum where all the parties in the gorge who have an interest and who care about it can appear, air their disputes, and try to work out their problems. And they've had a lot of success. It's a huge job. They need your support to do this job. It's one that no one else can really do. And more has been asked of them now than at any time in the past. Again, try to cut this short. We sure appreciate your support for their budget. I think the testimony you've heard so far today has been unanimous. Hope you can allow them the additional resources they need to do, again, what nobody else can do there in the gorge in terms of the cumulative impacts, air quality, development pressure. I think you've seen that demonstrated. Thank you very much for your support for the Gorge Commission and the work they do.
Thank you very much, Mr. Springer. Committee, at this time, we'll be adjourning shortly. I just wanted the audience to be aware that this particular budget had been selected by the co-chairs to go through. We have three different levels of process. One's accelerated, one's expedited, and one is long and too long.
That's four.
This was expedited. And in terms of expedited, one of the expectations was that there would be not very many modifications to the budget. But we've had some late-coming modifications to this budget, particularly given the additional dollars that are necessary to come to parity. So I would want people that actually follow this budget to realize that if we pass this budget out in the next couple of weeks and it isn't the budget that you would think was perfect, realize that we are not completely done with the budget. We're going to have to do this in a number of budgets that we pass out in terms of we will probably come back later and make an adjustment. We just think it's better to let the agency know where they're at this particular point so that they can plan for the future. The $100,000 plus was unexpected, actually, and the additional cost in terms of the cost of existing operations. So I just wanted people, even if we take action in the next couple of weeks, don't necessarily consider that the final action, but don't necessarily consider that that's a guarantee either, because a lot of us work on a lot of things until the very end of the session, and sometimes we are successful and sometimes we are not. So with that, we are adjourned, and thank you all for coming. And tomorrow, the committee will be considering the Marine Corps.